Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, are you crying?
Maybe, a little.
Is it because of Lee Scratch Perry?
Yeah, he was the upsetter.
The show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us sitting in, we have Bud Verge.
Hi, everybody.
And Mike Snyder.
How y'all doing?
Hey, guys.
All right, sad news again in the world of music. We recently lost dub pioneer Lee Scratch Perry. Patrick is the real expert here on the contributions of Lee Scratch Perry. I only know a little bit, mm-hmm. and I think I'm speaking for the other two at the table as well. but I know he was very influential and a big deal. And,
totally.
And I've read a lot of great tributes about Lee Scratch Perry. Tell us why this is an important person in the world of music.
Lee Scratch Perry was, above all things, I think, an individualist. He's probably one of the most original. So just to set up a little bit of background, Lee Scratch Perry, I believe, is 84 years old, something like that,
right,
when he passed. So he was born in the 1930s. And at this time, he grew up in a family in Jamaica where there was a lot of people who were basically laborers, right? They worked in the fields or they worked on a plantation and things like that. But Lee Scratch Perry was always a tremendously free spirit. He claims that he was a champion dominoes player when he was a kid, and instead of working, he would make money playing dominoes and like taking money off people at dominoes. But by the time he was in his teens, he had made his way to the heart of Jamaica, and the heart of Jamaica, at least to me, is Studio One, where Cox and Dot had his studio in the 1950s. And Lee Scratch Perry, who was only 5 feet tall, by the way, showed up at that studio and just basically made a nuisance of himself for a long time. He would do anything that needed to be done. He would run tapes to the, you know, cutting room. He would take acetates. He would clean up. He would do anything that needed to be done. And by the time he had become kind of a fixture around the studio doing all kinds of things, he was also absorbing all the things that were happening in the studio. And in the 60s, he was known primarily as a vocalist. Some of his early songs, he had a song called Madhead that was basically a song about the competing sound systems in Jamaica, right? It was really like a topical song of the day. He had a song called Roast Duck that was a very a double entendre. His overriding legacy, I think, is more of a producer and an inspiration to other people. But in the 60s, you know, he was a soul singer like many other people were at that time. And I think that's kind of the important thing here about Lee Scratch Perry. He took what was happening in Jamaica, where soul 45s and 78s were coming to the island and people were doing versions of those. But what Lee Scratch Perry did was take phrases and style and inspiration of Jamaica, right? The authentic stuff that he grew up with. And he put that in the mix and did it in a way that was so forward thinking that it appealed to people that were listening to music in England, right, who were also into pirate radio, right, and were into the Beatles. And it appealed to people in London and Europeans who wanted that authentic soul feeling, right? And 1968 and late 60s is when he sort of made his move on his own. And what he did at that point was really start to synthesize dub music. You would make a single in Jamaica, and we've talked about this on our podcast, right? You'd make a single, and on the B-side, you'd often do an instrumental version of that same song, right? Because you had, it might even be the Scatolites or, you know, whatever Jamaican band was playing in the studio at that time at Studio One. And Lee Scratch Perry began to experiment with those, right? He began to put a lot of echo, right? He put a lot of reverb. He took out certain bass parts in certain parts of the songs and dropped them back in. So essentially he was beginning to mix and do remixes in this very intense Jamaican and reggae style.
Clip-clap, clappity-clappity, clappity-clappity high. Clip-clap, clappity-clappity, clappity-clappity high. Roast fish and cornbread, hey, hey, hey. Roast fish and cornbread, yeah. Roast fish and cornbread, yeah. Roast fish and cornbread is a fight and freedom. And call it fine, tiny, tiny, tiny. Yeah. And call it fine, tiny, tiny, tiny.
And that essentially led to 1973 when he opened a studio called the Black Ark. And this was a studio that was probably unlike anything else. And to me, this is the part where Lee Scratch Perry becomes the biggest inspiration for me of all time. He essentially took outdated equipment. It wasn't state of the art. It was stuff he either got secondhand or found or somebody gave to him, and he plugged it all together and he just put a whole lot of weirdness on top of it, right? And just, you know, did all kinds of crazy things with this studio. And he used the studio, the console, as an instrument,
right?
I mean, he totally used that as an instrument, and he produced incredible records for Bob Marley. He produced incredible records for all Max Romeo.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth. Iron shirt and chase Satan out of earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase the devil out of earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. Satan is an evil host man, but him can't choke sit on I man. So when I check him, my last in hand, and if him slip a gun with him hand, I'm gonna put on a iron shirt and chase Satan out of earth. I'm gonna put on a iron shirt and chase the devil out of earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space.
We're going to create something out of these machines and this music that's going to chase all the ghosts away from the world, right? And he would do all these kinds of things. Heavy doses of ganja, heavy doses of parts of Rastafarian religion, parts of what he saw as inspiration. But more than anything, just this incredible vision that he had. And, you know, we heard recently from Harris King when he was talking about, you know, essentially the idea of man-machine, which Kraftwerk right. came up with a long time ago. That was the Lee Scratch Perry thing in the 70s. He thought the console should be a human being, and he tried to do everything possible. I mean, he would take dirt and put it on the console. He would take a tape they just recorded, like a Bob Marley record, and bury it in the dirt for like a day or two to let the spirit like gather up onto it, then bring it back and put it on the console. And like that's how they would cut the record. I mean, it's totally crazy. That to me is almost everything about Lee Scratch Perry. You can do it by yourself if you believe enough and you have the vision. You can do it in your basement, and you can produce, you can inspire, and you can do all kinds of things if you believe in it enough and you have the right magic fairy dust on it. And his fairy dust was just really special.
First thing I'll say is I know he was very much a part of early reggae.
That's
so
right.
When ska sort of begat reggae, right? And that sort of like more the kind of mid-tempo type of slow jam kind of feel that you think of with reggae and Bob Marley and all yep. that stuff. He was right there at the beginning of that, right? So there's that. But musically aside, just getting into like his work as a producer and a studio craftsman, to me, this is where his real influence, this is where his real influence is, because mm-hmm. when you think of performers, entertainers, whatever, who are DJs, who are basically creating sounds in studio then to present to the masses, and they have become stars just based on that,
right.
that, you know, all kind of traces back to him,
a
right?
lot of it does. Yeah, it really, really does, Jim. And you know, he was kind of one of these guys with like take all comers, bring anybody into the Black Ark studio you want. I'll work the Black Ark magic on that artist. And, you know, the list is kind of legendary. It's actually too much to even consume. I mean, and if you go and do a Google search on Lee Scratch Perry discography, it's almost impossible to decode, because he did all this stuff with the Upsetters, right? He did all this stuff as his own. He did all this stuff with Dub.
Are you ready? Are you ready to step with I know?
I mean, but you know this about the influence of Jamaican music on punk rock. It's, again, it was so important. It was a cornerstone for everything that happened, and Lee Scratch Perry is at the heart of that.
Between all the punk rock sets, they had reggae sets. That's right. Yeah. While the bands were changing over, they listened to reggae music. I mean, Don Letts was a crucial part of the punk scene in the early the mid-70s and the early 80s. And that's, you know, they all started to love reggae. And you listen to those early Crash records, even the middle Clash records, there's dub all over them.
Yep. I mean,
you can't get away from it.
Well, and then you continue to listen to Joe Strummer's albums till his death. I mean, the influence is there. And then there's also, if you're just a listener and a lover of music and you don't know a lot about Lee Scratch Perry, you do know he affected the Clash. He affected the Beastie Boys. I didn't know he worked with Linda McCartney's album, which I've never listened to. But, I mean, the artists you love were probably influenced by Lee Scratch Perry in some way.
Obviously, when we talk about a mentor to an early producer of Bob Marley.
Exactly.
So, I mean, there come on, go. Talk about an iconic figure, yeah. Right? So,
And Bob Marley and the Wailers came to him as a vocal trio, and he said, hey, let's expand your sound a little bit. And if you think of a song like Mr. Brown with that eerie kind of echo that's going around, and it's a guy riding around in a hearse coughing, like trying to scare people all the time, you know, that's right up his alley. And
Bud, you mentioned the connections with punk and reggae. I mean, Lee Scratch Perry produced Funky Reggae Party, which names checks about, you know, almost all your favorites, right?
That's exactly right.
So put that on and you'll get a little taste.
Yep. And I will say two really quick things to kind of wrap that up. And, you know, we can sit here and talk all day long about Lee Scratch Perry, but what you really have to do is go find some of the records. And there's a wonderful compilation called Arcology that covers a lot of the really interesting stuff.
Two quick things I want to say. One is you mentioned Arcology.
Yeah.
You have this CD set, and you once loaned it to me and said, listen to this, Jim. And I think it sat, you know, it's typical with me. It's sort of several months, I think it just sat on my shelf. And then finally, I pulled it out once and I put it in. And I'm not kidding about this. This was one of the very few times that the boy, my son, a teenager, when I put this on, actually sat down with me and just sort of listened to music. There's something that just pulls you in with this music, and he really enjoyed it.
That is crazy.
So that was really cool.
That's great.
The other thing is, as we've said before, Jamaica as a country musically punches way above its weight.
Oh, my God. Totally. Yeah. For size and everything else, it might
huge
be right
influence.
Up there. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Outsized influence.
Yeah.
On
music, sprinters.
On Western.
Oh, everything. Yeah.
It outkicks its coverage.
There you go.
There you go.
That's right.
All right, rest in power, Lee Scratch
rest
Perry.
In power.
And thank you for that, Patrick.
Absolutely.
That
really... And just go listen to his music.
Okay, well, something happier to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us are...
Mike Snyder.
And Bud Verge.
All right, we'll talk to y'all tomorrow.
Moon Mulligan.